This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kaysen. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kaysen.
Good. Wow, what happened to my voice? I was going to say good afternoon, but I can't even speak. I've been sitting here so quietly for the last half hour, and then I open my mouth, and nothing comes out. There's a frog in my throat. I think I'm going to croak. I'm Alan Gervy, and this is Gervy's Law, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, if my voice holds up, I will be the managing partner of your life. We have a really interesting show right here on 790 KBC. I'm here with Kerry Kaysen. Welcome back to L.A., Kerry Kaysen.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah, I've never seen you so quiet.
Yeah. Well, there's lots going on, so I'm being a little quiet today. But I do want to ask you, first I want to congratulate you on all the amazing work you did in Texas.
Oh, thanks.
And I know you just got back. Why don't you tell the folks what you were doing and how you helped out in this tragedy?
Yeah, I'm with a group called the Volunteer Ministers, and they are a disaster relief group. And I went to Haiti with them in 2010. And it was probably one of the most, it was horribly sad what happened, but rewarding to help people that needed help so badly. And when they called again for, Hurricane Harvey, I was on vacation in New York. I literally dropped everything and I flew out there. And it was unbelievable. There were so many people that we were in a town called Rockport, which the hurricane touched down for 35 minutes. It wasn't flooded because it was outside of Houston, but the houses, 35% of them gone, wiped off. 85% damaged. So the people that could still live in there, we took the trees off their houses. We took the debris, removed everything, got generators working. We had a team of construction workers, mechanics, and then people like me that whatever else was needed, literally people would chop logs and we would go in and take them out, all day long.
You were working hard. I saw a video of you carrying a lot of water and carrying bricks.
Branches and everything. And I couldn't get my, I didn't want to be taking selfies as I'm like sweating to death. But there were times where you could wring your entire outfit out. Yeah.
You were so serious, your face. You were just like on a mission.
We were all.
Literally.
Yeah. And it was hot. And it was, there were mosquitoes. We were making a joke. So a Texan said, you know what our state bird is? And we said, what? And he goes, the mosquito. Wow. And like, they were so big. And I had bites all over me, but it was worth it.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Hopefully it will help. And I know you made people feel good being there. And unfortunately, you may be off to Florida soon if things go the way, this weekend it looks like it will. So hopefully all our prayers are with those people and that are in harm's way. But for the meantime, I'm going to clear my throat. What is going on with this? Well, Nancy will think I'm being sexy, but I just can't speak. We have a great show for all of you today. A little later in the show, it's a really interesting case. There's a book coming out in October called Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Sent Me to Prison for 26 Years. And we have one of the co-authors, Burl Fallbaum, on the show. And we're going to talk about that book and Alton Logan. He was the guy who was sent to prison for 26 years. Kerry, tell me, I'm a lawyer, so I know this, but you must be just astonished, as my wife Nancy was when I told her about what happened to poor Alton, why he spent 26 years when he didn't commit a murder. Why did he do that?
You know, that's what I put on my Facebook, because to me, people are going to go, what is going on? This man is convicted of murdering somebody, yet the two lawyers on the other side knew he didn't do it.
It wasn't on the other side.
Well, it was.
They were public defenders.
Yes, but it was. Dale, it was the other man who said, hey, I did this. And he actually, they were defending this man, and they could not say anything to the real, about the real murderer. because it was client attorney privilege.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe this.
So this client confidentiality, attorney client privilege, Wilson was the guy, who was, he had killed two people, and then there was a question about this guy at McDonald's, the security guard, mm-hmm. and Dale Coventry and William Kearney, I'm not sure how to pronounce that name, represented Andrew Wilson, and after a month, 26 years, before Mr. Logan was let out, after a month, they said he confessed to it, but they couldn't say it. Because that would be a breach of confidentiality. So I think a lot of people have something to say about that. If you do want to call in, it's 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. We will be talking to Burl Fallbaum a little bit later and find out about this book and about this crazy story where someone, poor guy, Alton Logan, spent 26 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. Just because the attorneys for Andrew Wilson could not open their mouth and say that their client had confessed to the murder. They finally did when Wilson died in 2007, and that led to another inquiry, and Alton Logan was finally released from jail. You know, when you talk about the rights of people, innocent people who are in jail, or maybe are going to be put to death, we talk about capital punishment. And in the last election, we had Prop 66 on the ballot, and of course it passed, which was to accelerate the time to put a convict to death vis-a-vis capital punishment. And our first guest is someone who opposed that, and just recently we had the Supreme Court decision come out on the constitutionality of Prop 66, and in a 5-2 decision, the court ruled, it kind of rewrote the proposition, which is interesting. We'll find out from Christina von der Rayburn in a second what she feels about it. But they upheld the proposition saying, yes, you can accelerate it. But it seems like it'll be on a case-by-case basis because now they said it's not mandatory to accelerate it, but it could be within 5 years.
And what's so interesting to me is it seemed like the Supreme Court kind of rewrote the prop, which is not necessarily something that you do, but saying, okay, well, let's fix it a little bit. It doesn't have to be 5 years, but let's go with that being, you know, something that we will aim for. And right. I'm not sure that's even legal.
Well, let's find out from the expert, the person who really spearheaded on behalf of Orrick, her law firm. She's a partner there, and she spearheaded the opposition to this proposition. Her name is Christy von der Rayburn. Christy, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Carrie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you, Christy. You know, I think a lot of people's heads are spinning. First of all, tell us how you got involved with this mission, so to speak, to try and get this Prop 66 made unconstitutional because of the separation of powers doctrine and the equal protection clause.
It's pretty simple. ORIC has a fabulous pro bono program. It's a program in which we take on good causes for free. Some opponents of the death penalty asked us if we would be willing to challenge Proposition 66 in the event that it passed, and we were happy to.
And you're doing this pro bono. I know I love your firm. I have to tell you, one of my lawyers there, Mark Mermelstein, says to say hi. He was on this show.
He just shot me an email telling me to be nice.
That's hilarious. Anyway, you guys rock. You're doing this pro bono. You're doing this because you think it's unconstitutional. I just, you know, I was reading all about it. I feel as though, you know, because I worked with a woman who, this is in Florida. Her sister was murdered. They got the two guys on video. One of them got off because of the Innocence Project when she's like, I don't know how this could happen. He's there on video doing it. And the other one's still there. It's been over 20 years and she's had no justice. So I really go back and forth going, yeah, I understand the appeal system. Yeah, I understand what's going on. There is a backup of what, 300 people right now, with more that aren't, that haven't gone over their appeals. I go back and forth. I'm vacillating because I don't understand why we're paying so much money to have these guys sit on death row for so long.
That's That's a challenge for everybody. But the issue is essentially if you're going to have a death penalty system, you want it to not kill innocent people. But you also want it to be cheap, and you also want it to be fast. But you can't accomplish all three. If you want to really ensure that no innocent people get convicted, you have to spend some money on it, and you have to take some time. If you're willing to kill a few more innocent people, then you can save some money or save some time. But it's a balance that needs to be struck. Once you've committed to executing people who you think have been convicted of crimes, then you need to take the time to make sure you're executing the right people.
A lot of people, so, Christy, don't understand the underpinnings of that kind of statement. You know, a lot of people say, why is it so difficult in a capital case? Why can't attorneys handle it? Are they not prepared? Why will it take so long? And, you know, I think the thought is great that, you know, everyone needs due process. We've got to give everyone the opportunity, especially where there is a complex facts involved. But why isn't 5 years enough?
So first you have to think about a person convicted to be executed has two levels of appeal that they can take. First, they have to appeal to the Supreme Court. They get to appeal to the Supreme Court. That's the direct appeal of their conviction and sentencing. And they also have a chance to file a habeas corpus review. And that's kind of not a direct challenge to the conviction and sentence. It raises the kind of more different challenges, such as I had ineffective assistance of counsel during my case, or the prosecution was hiding evidence, or we just found new evidence that we couldn't have found earlier. So a convict needs to be able to follow both of those paths. And in addition, either one of those paths involves briefing, responsive briefing, initial decisions, further decisions. There's a lot of just time it takes to just do the legal process. But before any of that starts, you need to appoint counsel to this person, because this person is more likely than not indigent, so is going to need state-appointed counsel. And quite frankly, there just aren't that many lawyers out there who have all the skills necessary to take on a death penalty case.
Right.
It's a very hard thing to do, and you have to be willing to put in a lot of time for not very much money, and you have to have a lot of investigative skills and appellate skills and kind of all the skills that most litigators only have a few of them. A death penalty attorney has to have them all. One of the main things that's been taking time is just appointing a lawyer.
I think a lot of lay people don't understand that, but it really is a clogged system, and lawyers aren't necessarily willing to put in the time or have the knowledge to represent a lot of these people. And maybe some people say, who cares? But that's the basis of due process in this country. We're going to take a quick break, Christy, but after the break, we want to talk to you about the California Supreme Court decision, your opinion of the 5-2 decision, and what it will mean to Prop 66 and capital punishment in the future. Listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
In this tight labor market, finding new employees can be tough. Whether you're the business owner or an HR professional, you want access to highly qualified candidates fast. More than 3 million businesses use Indeed.com, the world's number one job site. Whether you need entry-level or highly skilled employees, no matter the industry, with Indeed, you get immediate access to a high-quality pool of talent with no long-term contracts or upfront fees. For a limited time, Indeed is offering new users a $50 credit to make their first job listing a sponsored job with premium visibility so more candidates will see it. You want to make a great hire fast, and this exclusive offer gives you a head start. Independent research shows 6 times more hires are delivered through Indeed than any other job site, making Indeed your one-stop source for hiring. To redeem this offer, go to Indeed.com/offer. That's Indeed.com/offer. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Right now, the Kohler Cimarron Comfort Height Elongated Toilet is at its lowest price ever at the Home Depot. Just $199. You save $49. At that price, you can raise your expectations but leave your budget exactly where it is. And the best news of all, it's a Kohler. They never compromise. Why should you? Start with the best. The Kohler Cimarron Comfort Height Toilet. Just $199. Now at the number one Kohler retailer, The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Valid through October 29th.
Attention investors, protect your IRA or 401k by storing your retirement at home with an Augusta Home Delivery Gold IRA. Call Augusta today at 888-852-4788 for a free guide on transferring a portion of your IRA or 401k into approved physical gold and silver coins and store them in your safe at home or at your local bank. Call 888-852-4788 today and discover how you can get up to $2,000 in silver free. Call 888-852-4788. That's 888-852-4788.
With Doug McIntyre in the morning.
It is really kind of stunning to see a team that was as hot as any team. Literally, we were talking about whether or not this Dodger team was the best team in the history of baseball. And right now, they're worse than Philadelphia.
That's awful. Worse
than the Phillies.
Now, is this because of the almost perfect game? Is this because of the Sports Illustrated cover? Or is this because I said they were going to go all the way?
You.
McIntyre in the morning.
Damn you, Randy!
5 to 10 on JABC. Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
We're back. I'm Alan Gervie, and we are talking to Christina von der Rayburn. Christy, as we like to call her. And she was someone who was instrumental in opposing California's Proposition 66, the ballot measure that sought to expedite the state's death penalty appeals process. She is also going to receive a very prestigious award in October, the Sandra Day O'Connor Award for Professional Service by the American Inns of Court. So, Christy, congratulations on that. When is that event taking place?
That event is taking place on October 21st at the Supreme Court, which is very exciting.
Yeah, congratulations.
It's amazing. And why don't you tell everyone what the American Inns of Court is? Because I think it's important that we talk about ethics and professionalism as lawyers, and that group really focuses on that.
They do indeed. The American Inns of Court is essentially a professional lawyer organization. They have branches all over the country. The one I am a member of is the Howard P. Markey Intellectual Property Inn of Court in Orange County. So it's focused on mentoring and professionalism and making sure younger lawyers have an opportunity to work with and learn from older lawyers to keep the profession ethical, professional, but also growing. And so my Inn of Court is focused on intellectual property because that is my focus in my day job.
It's a little different from the death penalty focus, which is also a name of an organization that honored you. When we talk about the work that you've done, so much work you've done, pro bono work, helping people out, but you argued at the Supreme Court in June. Tell us how that went on, of course, this issue of Prop 66 and the constitutionality of the proposition.
So that was, first of all, arguing in front of the California Supreme Court is an incredible experience because I guess most people should assume this, but they are very smart people and they are very well prepared. So the people who are working on our laws are doing it, are trying hard and are doing a good job. In this instance, I don't think that's necessarily true. Is now a good time to turn to Prop 66?
Yes.
Okay, so I think everybody knows at this point Proposition 66 was enacted to essentially speed up the death penalty process and the legal appeals associated with it and executions. And one of the provisions that concerned anti-death penalty people the most was a provision that said that all legal appeals relating to a death penalty conviction needed to be completed within 5 years. Now, there's a lot of numbers I could spout at you to say why the 5 years is not possible. But basically, to get everything completed within 5 years, especially given the backlog of death penalty cases we have before the Supreme Court right now, the Supreme Court would essentially have to do nothing but death penalty cases for the next 6.5 years to eliminate its backlog and start meeting this 5-year deadline. We thought that would, A, make the Supreme Court more likely to miss important innocence issues, and B, make the Supreme Court unable to essentially act as a court for any other type of case in California. So any business who has a fight essentially wouldn't be able to get the Supreme Court's attention if the Supreme Court had indeed been trying to honor this 5-year deadline.
Well,
so one of the main things we challenged... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Sorry, go ahead. Finish your statement.
Okay, so one of the main things we challenged in Proposition 66 was this 5-year deadline. We wanted it deemed unconstitutional and stricken altogether. But what the court did instead is deem it not mandatory, so the courts don't have to honor the 5-year deadline, but left it in the law. I think that's a much less clean way to render the decision, but it still is effectively a win for the side that was so concerned with that 5-year deadline.
You know,
every opinion the court issued. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, Christy, that you just said a couple minutes ago how smart the Supreme Court is. Were they doing this for political reasons? Because it doesn't sound very smart, and you know, I may be arguing in front of them in the near future, or in the long time
then
future.
Then be careful.
I'd be careful. But the point is that, you know, it really waters it down. Like, they didn't really address the constitutionality of it, and it looks like they're saying it's not a directive, it's not mandatory, the shall language is not a requirement. So it's meaningless except for a fact case-by-case basis.
Right. And if you read the majority opinion, they say it's meaningless. They essentially say we would only be able to meet this deadline if there were funding available from the legislature. There's not. So every court on a case-by-case basis is going to be able to say we couldn't meet the deadline. The concurring opinion was even more stark. They said nobody should look at this 5-year deadline as meaning anything. It has no basis in fact or law. There is no way it could ever be met, and no one should think about it. And then you have the dissent who's blasting everything out of the water. So I see it as a political decision, at least in part. The way the majority wrote it, they undercut the 5-year deadline altogether, but they were able to say we're honoring the will of the electorate. Now, that's a whole other question, because it's pretty clear to me, at least, that the electorate enacted Proposition 66 in order to achieve a 5-year deadline. So for the majority to undercut the 5-year deadline while also saying, you know, here we are, upholding the initiative you passed, seems a little questionable to me, but I think it was an attempt to not strike down a ballot initiative that was passed by California's voters.
Look, my question is, you know, let's take Polly Klass, for instance. She was murdered well over 20 years ago. Her murderer stated that he did it. Not only that, he showed the police where the body was. He's been on death row for well over 20 years now. Why can't they go case by case? You know, especially for people who've admitted it or said, hey, here's the body, let me lead you to it. Why are they on death row for so long? Why can't they do this case by case and go, okay, you did it. Okay, you're convicted, you're done. Why are we keeping these people in jail?
Is the Polly Klass case in California?
Yeah, I think it is, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so there's two things effectively right now slowing down executions. So one is this very long legal process that we have that we just don't have enough lawyers to speed it up. But the second is the fact that at this point in time, there is no approved way to execute people in California because of legal challenges related to how to actually execute people. And I'm sure we've all heard about the 3-drug protocol or 1-drug protocol. And essentially, the last adopted protocol with which California was supposed to execute people was invalidated, and it has been invalidated for over a decade at this point. So there are a number of people whose appeals have been finished, and so it's not the legal.
Sounds like we lost Christy.
Did we lose her? Not sure, but I can hear. Can you?
No, I can't. But yes, Polyclass definitely was in California.
Petaluma, California.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting because what I wanted to ask Christy is whether this is a win or a loss. And you can see how both sides would argue that it was a win because Proposition 66 was not struck for being unconstitutional, yet it was rendered meaningless. So you have a decision from the California Supreme Court that didn't want to go as so far as to say that it's unconstitutional, but then they said, well, you really can't, you can enforce it in a practical sense. So I guess both sides would claim a win.
A win, a victory? I don't know. I mean, there were a couple of judges that had to be removed because they had to deal with writing the bill. And so there was a judge that came in. It was two Court of Appeals judges took their places, and one of them being Justice Icola. And he says, who knows that a five-year term limit can't be made until we try it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you do? How do you get rid of the 300 cases before to make it go 5 years? It doesn't. And
well, I think that's what they're saying. We have Christy back. Christy, so what Carrie and I were talking about is whether or not this is a win for either side. Both sides can claim it's a win, but certainly there's nothing that, you know, you weren't successful in arguing that it's unconstitutional, yet from a practical perspective, you were probably successful in ensuring that people are not going to have expedited executions, and the other side can say, well, it's still on the books.
Right, and there's a lot that the other side got to keep. I apologize for dropping, by the way. I don't know quite where I left off, but there's a lot of other things in Proposition 66 that the other side can claim victory on. For example, there's a piece of Proposition 66 that exempts execution protocols from the Administrative Procedures Act. So I don't know how much you guys heard of my long speech about how one thing holding up executions is the inability of California to adopt an execution protocol. That's
yes, you did come with that, like the three different solutions and everything. Yes.
Okay. So one portion of Prop 66 exempts execution protocols from a legal procedure that essentially makes it harder for execution protocols to be adopted. So advocates of expediting the death penalty can claim a fairly big win in the fact that California will have an easier time adopting execution protocols now. So for the almost 20 men who are now sitting on death row and have completed their appeals, their deaths will be unquestionably expedited by Proposition 66.
So that it will have an effect. What is your role going to be from this point on? I know we only have 1 minute left. Where do you go from here with your role in this issue?
So we actually yesterday filed a petition for rehearing. We think there are some issues with the court's judgment, and we have filed a paper yesterday arguing those issues. The court then will either agree to grant rehearing, in which case I'm going to continue on with this fight, or the court will not, at which point I don't know where I go next. I think it will be up to the anti-death penalty community to tell me where they want me.
Continue on, right. And of course, you can always go back to your IP practice, your tech practice that you do during the day, and I know you do that really well. Good luck with the award ceremony for the Senator Day O'Connor Award for Professional Service by the American Inns of Court. Christy Vonderaar, thank you so much for being on Gurvey's Law today.
Nice to meet you both.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, you don't want to miss this story. It is really going to make you angry. It's the story of Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Sent Me to Prison for 26 Years. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Over 50,000 Florida residents are hunkering down in various public buildings set up to accommodate them. Meteorologist Allison Chinchar reports that wind gusts will be one of the main concerns regarding this storm.
At landfall point for a lot of these areas, these are your maximum wind gusts you're going to be dealing. 138 miles per hour in Key West, 136 in Fort Myers, even Tampa going to be looking at 116 miles per hour at its strongest point for the storm.
The storm is expected to make landfall in Florida on Sunday. KABC SoCal weather, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the mid to upper 60s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, with chances increasing to 50% for the afternoon and evening. And some of those thunderstorms may produce gusty winds and small hail. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Why won't a plumber just tell me what it costs to unclog my drain over the phone? Is it that complicated?
No, it's not. It makes no sense at all. They obviously have a price.
Whoa, you've got a nice aroma. Who are you?
Mike Diamond, the Smell Good Plumber.
Will you tell me how much to unstop my drain?
$99.
But you haven't seen it.
Don't need to. Doesn't matter if it's a kitchen sink or a mainline sewer stoppage. The Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond will unclog almost any drain for $99.
Almost?
Yeah, there are a few exceptions, but you can read all about them on our website before you call. Just go to thesmellgoodplumber.com.
Wow, you're like up front and everything. I just called a guy named Bubba who wouldn't tell me anything.
No Bubba's here, ma'am. Just professional plumbers who show up on time, smell good, and unclog drains for $99.
Call us, 1-800-446-MIKE.
Contractor license number 399-170.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervey's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervey.
Haven't heard that for a long time, Carrie. Anything that can go wrong can be made right. I think we taped that probably about 3 or 4 years ago.
That was
ago.
A long time ago.
I don't know if that's still true. 3 or 4 years later, I don't know that you can make things right. I'm not always. I'm starting to become a little more negative. I'm a little depressed today.
No.
Stuff going on in my life that makes me think, well, you can't always make things right. But, you know, I'm going to have to get that glass half full, because we had that other ad that we used to say the glass is half full if you're listening to Gervey's Law. So maybe we'll play that to get me pumped up for that positive attitude we started the show on about 4 years ago, which as the years have passed, I'm
slowly changing your mind, yeah. And the ads change.
It's not Murphy's. It's now Murphy's Law, not Gervey's Law. Not anymore. We're going to rename this Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
And you can't do anything about it.
And you can't do anything about it. And you know, we're laughing, but we want to switch gears right now, and it's very serious because for poor Alton Logan, anything that could go wrong did go wrong, and it's just really interesting. People who are not lawyers who are listening to this story will really wonder why Alton Logan was in prison for 26 years. The book is called Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Sent Me to Prison for 26 Years. It's written by not only Alton Logan, but our next guest, Burl Fallbaum, who's a veteran Detroit News political analyst and reporter, and he's a former Wayne State professor, a writer, a playwright,
Burl, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me on your program.
And you know, Burl, my dad went to Wayne State, and he ended up teaching English there. Yeah, and his hometown was in Detroit, Casey Kasem. So he was out there for, God, quite a while before he moved to Los Angeles.
Didn't have the pleasure of meeting him. I taught primarily at night and really didn't interact because of that with the faculty. But it's a wonderful university.
It is. It is.
So tell us, Burl, about the book. And it's coming out in October, right? Next month? Tell us.
October 10th, yes.
October 10th. And tell us the story of Alton Logan, because it's fascinating and, of course, it's disturbing.
Yes.
It's disturbing and it's tragic. Very quickly, in January of 82, two career criminals went to a McDonald's for food, which happened to be, coincidentally, about four blocks from Alton Logan's house, and went for food. One of the men, Edgar Ace Hope, went inside with a woman he had, Nadine Smart, and they were going to get food when their partner, who was in the car, noticed that they were arguing with the employees, and he was a career criminal. They were brutal. Both of them, incidentally, have died in prison for other murders since. And Andrew Gino Wilson went in after that because he saw the argument, and two security officers approached him, and he immediately brought up his shotgun and fired and killed one of the two security. Hope, meantime, knocked down the other security and fired an inch from his head the other security officer, except the security officer suddenly just turned and luckily survived that shot because it hit him in the arm instead of the head. And they escaped. What happened then is the police started an investigation. Somehow they got Logan's name. They went to his house, and I'll keep the story brief. They arrested him. He was identified by three people, two employees, and one, the security guard who survived. Fast forward, one of the two murderers was arrested for the murder of another police officer and was found with a gun that he had taken from the security officer and went to prison. He ended up sharing a cell with Alton Logan, whom we didn't know. The other partner in the crimes was also arrested a month later for the killing of two other police officers. When Hope was in the cell with Alton Logan, he told his lawyer that Alton Logan was innocent, that he'd never met this man before, and he instructed his lawyer to tell Alton Logan's lawyer that he was innocent. He harangued him. There's some honor among thieves. I never found out why Hope did that. Hope died before I had a chance to interview him. The lawyer did that. He told both Alton Logan's lawyer and the two lawyers representing the real murderer, the one who fired the shot, that he's the one who did it, and that Logan is innocent. That put the lawyers into a legal bind ethically. So the two lawyers who represented the man who shot and killed the officer went and asked him, "Did you do this?" And he said, "Yes, I did." And because of lawyer-client confidentiality, they could not come forward. So here's what they did. There were four lawyers involved. They all knew that Logan was innocent. What they did was they drafted an affidavit that Alton Logan was innocent, locked it in a strong box, and one of the lawyers kept it under his bed for 26 years until Wilson died in prison for the murders of two other police officers. So that quickly, in a wrap-up, is the story. The good news in this is that one of the lawyers asked Wilson, "If you die in prison, can I speak? Can I then divulge this information?" And he agreed. That, without all the complexity, is one reason Alton Logan got out. Theoretically, had Wilson said no, he might still be in prison as we talk. So that's what, in summary.
Wait a second. What proof did they have that Wilson actually agreed for him to say yes, that I did it, if he died?
Well, you asked a very good question. All we have is the word of the attorney who heard it. There are no written documents that he agreed, but the court, when it finally went to court 26 years later, made a judgment that there were no reasons for Wilson to lie or for the lawyer to lie.
Wow.
Plus one other reason, and it gets complex. The real murderer did, some 25 years later, write a confession to a jailhouse lawyer that he committed the crime. So there was a document that he had signed and was notarized that he committed the crime, although for some reason no one could find the sealed the notary seal on it and the signature, but the court accepted the unsigned confession from the real murderer. So you're right, there aren't any documents except the word of the murderer plus the lawyer. There was no reason for them to lie.
You know, Carrie and I were speaking before we start talking to you, Burrell, and, you know, Carrie was outraged because as an attorney, I understand the attorney-client privilege. I always tell my clients, you can say anything to me. You can feel very comfortable. Anything you say, I cannot repeat and I will not divulge. But what Carrie said, and Carrie, I'm asking you right now, she said, if someone said they murdered someone, why isn't that an exception to the confidentiality?
Right. And why, here's my feeling. There's something needs to change here. And I understand that you might not have people come forward to get attorneys because they'd be scared of saying something. I get that. Right. But when somebody says, this guy didn't do it, there needs to be something changed in the law, don't you think?
Well, that's my position. When I heard about the story, I live, by the way, outside Detroit, and Alton lives in Chicago. So I commuted 2 years back and forth doing research. My premise from the beginning was that in a free society, in a democratic, just society, we cannot, and here's the key word, knowingly let an innocent man stay in prison. There has to be a way to get that man out. And we propose some changes to the ethical code. It's called Model Rule 1.6. To achieve that, and the last chapter offers some changes. And incidentally, Massachusetts and Alaska has that provision. It says lawyers may divulge when it exonerates an innocent person. It doesn't say required, but it gives them the opportunity to do so. There are ways, in our view, that can be achieved without violating the rights of a client. It can, and more importantly, in my view, it should be done. For instance, why not just give the man immunity for the crime to get the innocent man out? That's one way. Two, after he dies, there's no reason anymore to do that. So two. Three, he already was facing two capital murder offenses for killing two other police officers, so this revelation would not have harmed him anymore. He was already facing the death penalty in two other cases. I'm not a lawyer, but we certainly have the brains and the sophistication to work out something protecting lawyer-client confidentiality, but at the same time, not sacrificing the innocent at the expense of the guilty. We can't permit that to happen.
I agree with you. And I'm not sure which attorney said this, but it was Dale Coventry or Jamie Coons, that, you know, if Alton would have gotten the death penalty, they would have spoken up. Now, if he would have, and they did come forward with that information, would that have even been admissible? Would they have been able to stop the execution?
Well, you ask some fascinating questions, all of which I ask. Coventry went to the court the day that he didn't identify himself. He went into court the day the jury was to decide whether they would give Alton the death penalty because he said, I wanted to see what would happen and what we would do if he did. The vote was 10-2. It had to be unanimous. Two votes saved Alton Logan from facing the death penalty or being executed. And Coventry told me, Jamie Coons tragically has to pass away, but both of them were very forthright with me in all the interviews. Coventry said that if Alton Logan had been sentenced to death, he would have gone to the governor of the state of Illinois and asked him to, exonerate and set aside the death penalty. He was going to do that. And I asked him, well, what if the governor had said no for whatever reasons? He said, we didn't take the case that far. But each one of them said, and there were four lawyers, Coventry, Jamie Coon, who sadly passed away, Mark Miller, who was the attorney who told the two that Alton Logan was innocent, And Andrea Lyon, who worked in the public defender's office, who got involved in the case, who's now dean of Valparaiso's Law School, she's the one, by the way, who recommended writing the affidavit, that they would have, quote, done something if he had been sentenced. But Alton Logan's reaction is, I told him that, and I said, how do you feel about the fact that they said that if you had been sentenced to death, they would have done something? And he said, Burl, I got a death sentence. They have no idea. There is no difference between being executed and being given a life sentence. The two are the same. The only difference is the life sentence, you die a little slower.
Yeah, you know, yes. It's interesting, yes, you say that, because, you know, a lot of lawyers, if they are told by someone that they're going to kill someone, I think they do have a ethical duty to go to the authorities, because you can't be responsible if someone and the threat is real and someone's going to kill them. And what you're saying is basically it should be the same, even though it occurred in the past. But Alton Logan was in effect, harmed in almost the same way. His life was stopped, and he could say, you know, metaphorically killed.
Absolutely, and Covendy made that point. He said that he hadn't thought about if the governor turned him down what he would do, but he said one thing he considered was using the exception that you just cited, that if a violent crime or a crime were to be committed in the future, lawyers can come forward. He was going to use that argument if the governor turned him down, he thought, of saying that Alton Logan's life is at stake, so I'm going to use that exception to argue the case. He said, though, he did not believe that the system would accept that, because that's not what it's designed for. So Alton, unfortunately, was in a bind.
It just makes me think, when you just said that, it's very fascinating. Burl, did Dale come across Coventry? Did he come across as having guilt or feeling terrible? Like, he lived 26 years with this. How did he come across?
Yeah. All four lawyers told me they agonized over that decision. Well, three of them. Mark Miller, he said he had personal illness issues and couldn't talk with me. All three of them said they agonized over, especially Mr. Coons, who's passed away. He said the agonizer was retching. He cried. He was in court the day he was exonerated and let go, and he said, I cried with the family. And but he also was adamant that he did the only things that he believed he could do. And frankly, he went further when I went through all the proposed changes that we were going to write about. He said, I don't believe we can solve this problem, which I don't agree with. But yes, they understood and were agonized by the decision. I told them from the outset, incidentally, when I started the book, which is 2 years ago, that I told them I disagree totally with them, and that's why I'm writing it. But I said I disagreed with them totally. But yes, they were agonized. But they claimed and they maintained that there was no alternative, which I do not agree with.
I don't either, and I think things need to change. And like you said, Minnesota and Alaska have a certain clause. Massachusetts and Alaska, yeah. And that should, I think, you know, be taken up state by state and changed. It definitely can.
Well, one of the things I'm going to try to do, I've made some calls to law associations and so forth, hoping that somebody will take up that cause and again, at the risk of repetition, we have the brains to solve it. We give immunity to people all the time. We let them go for crimes to get evidence for other wrongdoing. We do it all the time. We have the brains, we have the power, and sometimes we have to change cultures. And everybody's calling me a Don Quixote, but I'm going to try it.
You know, the thing about it is you have the proof in your hands, the book, Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Sent Me to Prison for 26 Years. You've spent a lot of time with Alton Logan. He has to be the poster child for this. I mean, we have to respect his feelings and what his life has been like when he spent his most important years in prison.
Now you want to hear the icing on the cake, so to speak.
Yeah, give us the kicker.
When I interviewed him and I said, how do you feel about these attorneys? Because he met them at speaking engagements. And he met Coventry and Coons and when they were in a legal summer. And he told me the story when he first met them. He said, I walked into the room and Coventry and Coons were standing there, and I walked toward them, and they backed up. And he said, I stopped and laughed. And I said, why? He said, well, they knew, didn't know how I would react. And here's what he told me. He told me he understood their difficulty. And I said, you weren't angry, bitter? He said, no. He said, I understood it. I don't think they did the right thing. They should have come forward, but I understood it. Why? He said, because they were the only ones in the system that followed some rules. Now, to make such a kind of a distinction for a man who spent 26 years in prison just bothered my mind. I said, I would not be that magnanimous if that happened to me.
He sounds like a good man. And did he get, not that this is going to help regain those 26 years, but did he get that $10 million, over $10 million settlement that he was supposed to get from Chicago or from the state?
Yeah, he got two things. There are 31 states, and now Michigan, there'll probably be 32, that offer some compensation for exonerees, and it ranges from roughly $5,000 to $83,000 a year. He got, and Illinois had just adopted that, and he got $200,000, roughly $7,000 a year, because they capped it in Illinois. However, which we haven't talked about, in addition to this tragedy, he filed suit against the police department for being framed for hiding witnesses and a lot of other civil rights violations. And the night before they were to go to trial, they settled on $10 million. But that was for misconduct by the police. Of the $10 million, he netted sort of roughly $5 million because of the legal commission and, you know, for the lawyers that won the case for him and other expenses. What that did is gave him financial security to live out his life. He was 55 when he was let out. He was 28 when he got in. And he said that when he got out, he looked for a job, but nobody believed his story, no matter the fact that his resumes would include news stories and certificates from the court. Nobody would hire him. So the $5 million, a lot of people told me, well, he got a good deal. I said, he'll take his 26 years.
I think all of us would do that. The book is called Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Sent Me to Prison for 26 Years. Will be released October 10th. Isn't that right, Burrell?
Yes, one minor, if I may. It's kept me in prison for 26 years because they didn't send them to, and I know it's a minor thing, but the book is Justice Failed, How Legal Ethics Kept Me in Prison, because it was what sent them to prison really were the three witnesses who identified them mistakenly, and we all know how eyewitnesses, you know, can be wrong. But it goes on sale October 10th. It's already on, people can pre-order it on Amazon and other websites, and it can be pre-ordered on other websites, Barnes & Noble and those that sell books.
Right. You know, Burrell,
I want to thank you for having me.
Yeah, Burrell Fallbaum, thanks for being on Gervie's Line. Good luck with the book. I'm sure we're all going to want to read it once it's released.
Well, again, thanks for your kindness of having me. I enjoyed chatting about it with you.
All right. Have a good day, Burrell.
Thank you.
Wow.
Bye-bye.
No, bye-bye.
Wow.
It's Is that something?
Yeah, and what's so interesting, too, I was reading on this case, and it's Police Commander John Berg. He has cost the city of Chicago around $60 million for misconduct and for hiding evidence and everything. So this guy's a bad dude.
Well, there's a lot of them. You know, we didn't talk about Michael Bennett today, but he thinks that the Vegas police are bad dudes. And some people would argue with that, saying that they did their job. NFL starting up this weekend.
Are you happy?
Very happy. Vikings and Saints. Go Vikings. On Monday night, Adrian Peterson gets back into Minneapolis for a game against his former team, the Vikings. I'll be watching.
We should do a sports show.
I would love that.
I know.
I would love that. Next week, it's the Kings. We are bumped. We won't be here. Gervie's Law will not be here next week because the LA Kings have an exhibition game. I believe it's against the Vancouver Canucks. And then in 2 weeks, Gervie's Law will be back. In the meantime, check us out on Facebook. And if you have any questions, email us, and we will be happy to take suggestions for guests. Take it easy. Have a great 2 weeks. We'll see you. Carrie, we'll see you in a couple weeks.
That's right.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
This show furnished by Rowan Gervey and Wynn.